There literally used to be this place called the Russian Market where we used to go shop because Russia bora import gordurits lugaru, and the stereotype in China is that Russians are very tall and they have big feet. Literally, that's the stereotype. Oh, so you would find like big size shoes and longer dresses that are like maxi dresses.
For many years, thousands of Nepalis have been moving overseas with the hopes of a better education, job, and lifestyle. Some find success in conventional fields, while some carve their own paths. Who is to say one is better than the other? Success is a journey, not a destination. So, come on this journey with me, where we connect with our Nepali communities living overseas and explore their conventional and unconventional paths. My name is Sankalpa Gurung, and this is Hamro Yatra. Namaste and welcome to Hamro Yatra. Our guest for today's episode is Asta Pandey. Born in Kathmandu, Nepal, Asta moved to Beijing with her family when she was only 2 months old. Fluent in Mandarin amongst other languages, Asta is a strong and confident woman who is unapologetically herself. In this episode, we go over Asta's childhood growing up in China and the intricate duality we all face of being brought up in a different culture, yet trying to hold on to our Nepali heritage. We dive deeper into the idea of beauty, taking into account Asta's very own experiences with beauty pageants. While talking about our insecurities, Asta drives home the importance of self-acceptance. As always, if you enjoyed these conversations, please share with your friends and family. Remember to follow our Instagram page at hamro.yatra for updates, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and leave us a 5-star review. You can also financially support us on thisishamroyatra.com/support. Welcome to Hamro Yatra, Asta. I'm so glad to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's a privilege for me to actually be on your show. So I'm really happy to be here and chat with you.
Thank you. Now, as you probably know, we start our show with a few icebreakers. The first question being, if you could pick any superpower, what would you pick?
If I could pick any superpower, it would be to read someone's mind. I want to be able to know what people are thinking just because I'm just so curious about everything. And I think it might be an insecurity of mine that I just want to know if they like me or not. I think that's really important to me. I'd really like to read people's minds.
And let's extend that to pets as well, because now that you have a little puppy, that would probably be helpful, right?
That would be so helpful. I just need to know when he's going to pee, when he's going to poop, before he does it, before he ruins my floor or like my bed. So 100%. It would be really nice to read a puppy's mind.
And if you could pick one dish for the rest of your life, what would you choose?
100% plain rice. I don't know what it is, but I just love the flavor of plain rice. Like, I don't need any spices, nothing. Just bhat.
I have to ask you, gilo bhat ki purra pareko bhat?
Gilo bhat. I think this is something that people find really, really disappointing about me, especially in the Nepali community and at ghar. Like, at home, everyone wants like purra pare bhat, basmati khanda parcha sabai jana.
I know. Story of my life.
Yeah, but I Chinese restaurants, makhani just for that. That is what I want in my life for the rest of my life.
Growing up, karmajane purra pareko bhat khane, na? Ani, like, I hated it. Like, I just didn't like it. Bhat khanu pari, like, I lose my appetite.
Yeah.
And then I went overseas and then I saw that there was like this gulog pareko bhat. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so much better. Like, why don't we have this kind of rice?
Exactly. I feel like purra pare rice is so hard to eat in the sense that like the chamchama mane kasto apyaro lagyo.
But I do agree with you. It is a very unpopular opinion in the Nepali community. Unpopular. And Asta, if you could go back into Nepal's historical moments, anything in the past, is there a particular moment you'd like to go back to?
If there was a time machine and I could travel back, I'd like to travel back in a time where Kathmandu wasn't really a city and had less buildings, less people. I don't know. I've heard maybe not less people, but less buildings and less pollution and less...
When it was first starting out, I guess.
Yeah, I'd like to be around that time when, like, the darbars were built or, I don't know, like, olden times where... I guess women would just be around in saris and you wouldn't see much women wearing like pants even, just to experience what that type of life would have been like. I feel like I would have been classified as a raging bitch at the time and probably been called a problematic person in society. And
you would probably have been accused of being a witch, you know?
100%.
And then, because that's what happens to women with opinions, you know, they're a witch.
Yeah. 100%. That's like, it's very interesting to think.
Now, before we get into where you are today, Asta, I wanted to again go back into time a little bit. Tell us about young Asta. What was your childhood like?
My childhood was very, I don't know, it was very interesting in the sense that I was in different cultures. So I grew up in Beijing. So I was always an outsider. But I went to an international school where everyone spoke English. But I also started off in a Chinese public kindergarten. So I picked up Chinese there.
How old were you when you moved to Beijing?
I was conceived there and my mom literally just flew back to Kathmandu to have me. And then 2 months after her sukkiri sadmi bila, my mom and dad came back because they had work. And I was 2 months old when I was in China and I only lived in Beijing and I would go back home in a year, about 4 months, I would be in Nepal and 8 months, I would be in Beijing for school.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was interesting. Guatemala, we would just speak Nepali because mom enforced that on us. Starting off in school, I would only speak Mandarin. And then suddenly I went to an international school because my dad was like, yo, like she needs to learn how to use English. It's like the business language of the world. So that happened. And it was very interesting. Like my life was always so different from my cousins and I always wanted to relate with them. So I think I really tried very, very hard keeping my Nepali bun, regardless of not being in Nepal, as much as I could. And to be fair, I guess I'm not as Nepali as people would want me to be, but I tried really hard to keep myself engaged with the Nepali community, whether I was a small kid, a toddler or in middle school or in high school, I always tried. So it was a very multicultural, multilingual environment that I grew up in, where academics were the most biggest priorities of your life.
Yeah.
At least my parents made it. And growing up in East Asia and seeing a lot of my parents' friends enforce academics on their kids too, it was very competitive in that aspect. So yeah, I've lived a very competitive, multilingual, diverse childhood, I want to say. And I think I'm really privileged to have had that experience.
I used to live in Hong Kong for a few years and we traveled back and forth. And I always remember that when I was living in Hong Kong for a long period of time, it was one of the times where I felt most insecure about myself. You know, I have Asian features, but then I'm too dark to be like one of them. And I've had so many instances where people would walk past me and they would do a double take. Like they would just look back and be like, oh, wait, hold on. What is she kind of thing? And like my feet would be too big or like I just felt so out of place. And I wasn't living there full time. It was just like once in a while. So what was your experience like growing up in Beijing, like from 2 months old? Like I know you went to international school, so that could have changed things. But still, like you are growing up in the community?
100%. Even though I went to an international school, like there was a good amount of students that were East Asian and not just from China, but all over the world. They had come from all over the world, but they're ethnically East Asian. And the beauty standards for in those communities are rather intense. And it's the same in the South Asian community, too. Like we always want fair skin. We always want big eyes. We want a big nose bridge.
Yeah.
You want to be petite and thin. Basically, I don't know, like they expect you to be like a doll, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, I just find that there was just so many unnecessary beauty standards that were applied, not only from like the South Asian community, like the Nepali community that I was in touch with, but also from the East Asian community or the Chinese community. Luga ko sizes dekhi le, jutta ko sizes dekhi le, ke puni paon de na, you know? And there literally used to be this place called the Russian market where we used to go shop because Russia bada import gardare to Lugaru and the stereotype stereotype in China is that Russians are very tall and they have big feet. Literally, that's the stereotype. Oh, so you would find like big size shoes and longer dresses that are like maxi dresses that are longer. We'll say like in my school, one of the things that I remember, and this was not specific to the school itself, but specific to a certain community. A lot of the girls suddenly, one summer after 10th grade, came back and something was different about them. And I was just really confused, like, I found out that all of them had gotten double eyelid surgery done. All of them, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but most of them. What I found out was, parents are like, they enforce that it's a double eyelid surgery once they're of age to do so. And of age, let's say 16 years of age, basically. And that really blew my mind, because I happen to think that one has to be 18-year-old to, or at least 19-years-old to be able to make that type of decision for themselves, unless it's something that they really need to live with. And I guess there's not much of a big, like not big of a difference between 16 and 18 year olds to make that decision for themselves either. But getting under the knife for a beauty standard that wasn't, that you weren't born with, that broke my heart a little bit to see that, you know, girls were being put in that position where they had to do that to themselves. And frankly, there are a lot of things that I wish I could change about me. Probably if I had the money to do so, I would have. I don't know. I haven't thought about how I would go about them. Mm-hmm. But at the age of 16, definitely no girl needs to feel that way. Just lots of it. Like,
especially from their parents.
That's where I'm like, okay, that's problematic.
Yeah, like you see this on social media and like you see this in other people and stuff. But coming from your parents, it's just not okay.
Yeah, and to a certain extent, being South Asian, I know exactly what that's like when your parents are maybe pushing you a little too much for certain things. Like my weight was a big problem at home. My parents may not have fat shamed me directly, but they definitely enforced.
Subtle.
Yeah, there was a lot of like, I'm a family, my diabetes runs, you know, like blood pressure, high, it's a physical health, like take care of one person. Like I understand and I appreciate the approach of health and fitness and nutrition. I 100% do. But there used to be times where I would want to sleep in, but my mom would just be like, "Uthera exercise, garne parcha." Versus, you know, gariyala, aile ne gara, aile gare pachi dius parcha. Versus, I'd just be like, no, can I just sleep in for 2 hours and then I'll do my yoga? But so there was a lot of things that were enforced, like dinners, let's see, walk garnazani by the like speed walk garnazani was enforced, which is great. Like them trying to give me good habits is one thing, but also really pushing it really makes a kid repel that too. But yeah, like I was very active. I was trained in badminton. So my mom, after school, every other day I would have badminton classes, especially over the weekends. And I would have also, I had also joined the soccer team, the basketball team, and the volleyball team. I was pretty active as a kid. I was very, very active, always very athletic, but I've always been plus size. And I hate the term plus size, but I use it because it's just a term that people use now. But I've always been a big kid. And I think the fine line between health and the size is really neglected in that part of the world, and and maybe all over the world too. It's just people have very little information about what fitness really is. And yeah, like when I would go to the hospital too, they would make everything about my weight. And even when my weight has nothing to do with the problem that I'm in the hospital for, it would always be made about my weight. Okay, so definitely living in East and South Asia, it's been tough. With my body image, I've had a lot of insecurities growing up, and biggest one is my butt. I have a big butt, and throughout school I was called ass because my name is Asta, and I'm ass one, or bunny just found a bunny stuff is on my arse one, or like big butt bunny bunny. This kid actually came up to me and was like, "Hey Asta, did your parents name you Asta because you have a big ass?" And that was like a ongoing joke in school. You know, but thankfully I'm the type, or I became the type, that never really took anyone's shit. So I had a good number of years I also had a foul mouth. Like if somebody hurt me, I would hurt them too, which I don't recommend anymore. And I've learned not to do that along the way, but definitely I think Growing up in East Asia, being a South Asian woman who's a complete different color, was tough. But then, in another way, China, ma manchu ekdamai welcoming ton. I know foreigners are like, I used to get a lot of compliments. People would look me up and down, not negatively, but like, ooh, videshi manche bhanera thyo. Like, it's not necessarily negative. It's just
curiosity.
Curiosity.
Mm. But I do agree with you that 16, 18 is such an impressionable age that you need time to get used to your body. Like, your body hasn't even fully developed yet.
Yeah.
I know. Like, malai sora ataratira, if my parents had said, oh, birthday gift, you can do whatever you want, I probably had to get my boobs done.
At the time. Oh, 100%. Me too.
At the time, exactly. Yeah. I'm like, no, I'm like so happy with whatever I have. Like, and it takes time to like be comfortable with yourself and really just value yourself for who you are. And it's so hard to get to that stage. Okay?
Yeah. But that has using your problems in Malay. I'm a communities one that body in media I'm a blame girls. I think it all stems from there. All we see on TV is a certain size or a certain type of figure, you know. And yes, in the recent years, we've seen a lot of change there, and social media has been very positive in giving a lot of people who didn't get the type of recognition, or they didn't see people like them on screen, and now they do. So I feel like kids these days are a little more, I don't know if they're luckier to see themselves on screen. Or people like them on screen to give them that confidence boost. Mm. But like growing up, I didn't see big girls on screen. I mostly just saw like the same beauty ideals being reinforced. Be fair, be thin. Be fair, be thin. Have small feet. Like, yes, that's beautiful. But there are other types of beauties in the world too that maybe you could showcase. And I think that is the biggest problem. We don't see enough of other people like yourself, and when you're the only one that's different and standing out, one, it can be very daunting. Two, it can create so much more insecurities that you didn't even know that you had. Given it's the komolo age where you're trying to fit in as much as possible. So definitely it's a big thing, but thankfully I never really wanted to fit in. I was always very happy and unapologetic about who I am. Of course, I have my insecurities, but I may go and cry once in a while, but I definitely don't let it affect me to a point where I can't breathe anymore, or at least not anymore. Yeah. Not anymore. There were times where I did let myself get affected very, very deeply, but not anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that about you. Like, even just talking to you, I can see you're so strong. And like, you carry that with the way you talk as well, the way you talk about things. And Sunny,
thank you. I feel like vulnerability is strength, you know, being able to share your deepest, darkest secrets. It doesn't have to be the deepest of darkest of secrets, but being able to really acknowledge your, well, one, mistakes and your flaws and or the things you pride about yourself, just being able to unapologetically talk about yourself. Like, there's nothing to hide, just a lot to say. Why should I be afraid of talking about you? Yeah. So I feel like that's where I have a lot of confidence in myself, that I don't think I've done anything wrong. I truly believe that I want to be a good person, and that I think that's where my confidence comes from. Mm. And I don't think I'm a strong person at all. I'm very emotional.
But the thing is, like, just because you're emotional does not mean you're not strong.
Okay, that's fair. Actually, that is very fair.
Like, I think we need to change the narrative of what strong means, right? So, like, strong doesn't mean that you have to be all muscular and, like, you know, pick up things and do all these things. Like, strong could also mean in being emotional.
100%.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. There's strength in your vulnerability. I like that.
Yeah. Now, Asta, you then moved to Vancouver and completed your undergraduate degree from University of British Columbia with a degree in economics, poli-sci, and Chinese language.
It was an interdisciplinary degree.
Mm.
And it was very nice because I was really confused. When I started off, I started off with an international economics school route. I had gotten into the business school, and then halfway through, I was like, I should have taken the business school route. And then 2 years in, I had taken political science and economics courses. So as prereqs, it worked out. And I got to sit down with a coordinator, and he was like, why don't you do an inter- interdisciplinary degree. You have all the prereqs for this. And yeah, it was really nice because it was everything I loved. I love politics. I love economics. Yeah. And I love Chinese philosophy and language. So, and as different as those subjects are, it really worked out for me. And my Chinese language has brought me quite far, because all the jobs I've landed have really been in that market, and it's really worked out because I do hope to move back into that market at some point. Mm. But yeah, it was a very interesting combination. And I think I'm so privileged to have had that opportunity. Anyone who would ask me, hey, I'm so confused, what should I study? I'd be like, do something interdisciplinary and do it in the disciplines that interest you the most, because you don't always just like one thing. There are multiple things that you like and want to study. So I definitely recommend that for a lot of people.
Also, the degree that you does not necessarily mean that you have to work in finance or you have to work in economics degree either, right? Because you're getting all the skills and you can use that in any other jobs that you want for yourself.
100%. I myself have not worked in any financial institution, have not worked really as an economist at all. Political science, really, I didn't do much in that area either. In fact, I've only worked in technology and yeah. I've been working with artificial intelligence and Internet of Things, with all this new tech, next gen solutions, virtual and augmented reality. So it's been very interesting. It's mostly, I think, it's really what kind of skills you gain. Yeah, like you said, and they're all transferable in all different sorts of industries. And I'm actually soon starting school in September, and I'll be taking an online and broadcast journalism course, and I'm super excited for that.
Oh my God, congrats. I feel like we were talking about this and it's happening.
It's finally happening. I got my acceptance last week. So my
happening for you, Asta. This is your year.
All within like touch wood. Like the non-superstitious person gets superstitious conveniently. Okay. No, definitely it's really been working out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm so happy for you.
I know, I'm so happy for me too. Thank you.
I wanted to touch a little bit upon how last year you also took part in the Miss World Canada, with your main message being about self-love, right? So we talked a little bit about self-love earlier on. How was your experience participating in a beauty pageant?
It took me one beauty pageant to learn that it's not for me. It took me two beauty pageants to learn that beauty pageants are all the same all over the world. And it took me three beauty pageants to learn how much women have been affected by everything that they see on the media. It is absolutely mind-boggling. And I did three different beauty pageants because they were completely different types. One was a North American Nepali-based. So the girls that I met were all Nepalese women who lived in North America. So that's like the diaspora, you know, like a different group of girls. Mm-hmm. And then I came to Canada and I was like, okay, let's try out a Canadian group of folks. All these Canadian women, that a bunch of them being immigrants, a bunch of them being second or third generation folks, different stories. There were a lot of different girls who have been in the pageant scene for 10 years almost, that tried and tried and tried and tried and tried. And then I did Miss Universe Nepal right after that. It was all online during COVID. So I was like doing an online pageant. That's an experience I don't want to let go. And so I did that. And that was really cool too, to see a lot of different things that in Nepali pageantry, we don't see, like bikini walks.
Yeah.
It was very inclusive in certain aspects, but also it lacked a lot of inclusivity in certain aspects. Mm. This is what my pageant trainer at the time told me when I was doing Miss Universe Nepal. He said, you got to take your personality and mold it into something that they want. And that's flag number one. That's a major red flag for me. Like, I'm not here to mold myself. You know, I'm here to present who I am. And a lot of women get into pageantry thinking, I'm here to present who I am. I'm going to be myself. Mm. They're not looking for you. They're looking for a certain type of
version that they already have made in their minds.
Exactly. And if you do not fall into that checklist, I'm sorry, like, lady, this is not for you. Mm. And as sad as it sounds, every pageant that I joined, the three pageants that I joined, I never thought I was going to win, ever. I never joined to win. I always joined to give a level, a certain level of representation. And I was flooded with messages from people I didn't know saying, it was so nice to see what you had to say about the woman's body. It was so nice to hear and see a bigger woman on screen, so comfortable with her body in a two-piece bikini. Frankly, I wasn't comfortable, but I really don't want my kids to grow up in a society where they only see one type of person on the media and be like, I'm not like her.
Yeah.
And not be happy with their own unique selves. And I think a lot more big girls, as much as you hate pageantry or don't like the core values of pageantry, I want to say that pageantry as a business is not going to stop. The beauty industry is billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. It's not going to stop. It's up to us to take that stand and create more representation through social media, through TV, you know? Mm-hmm. So knowing that pageantry is never going to stop, it isn't. It's such a money-making business that it's not going to stop. And there are mm-hmm. a lot of positive things that have come in a lot of winners of Go Life. And Sunny, like, they've become major celebrities. Yeah. They've gotten into industries that they want to get into through this stepping stone that is a pageant. It just sucks that you have to look a certain way to have those doors open for you. Or it just sucks that you have to speak a certain...
It's very conditional, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. And beauty should not be conditional, you know? Since when did we have a rule book on how somebody should look? I don't believe in God personally, but a lot of people around me do believe in God, and they believe that, you know, you are made uniquely by God. Mm.
Yeah. And earlier this year, Asta, you were in between jobs, and we discussed a little bit about this importance of rest and resetting, right? A lot of the times in our communities, I think we really celebrate when people get jobs and they get promotions and they do all these different milestones, but no one really talks about this time in between and this importance of just taking care of ourselves. Can you walk us through what that period was for you like?
Definitely, definitely. So after grad, I have worked back to back during my last 2 years in college as well. I was just working and working and working. I wanted to make money. I wanted to save up. Wanted to be able to pay for the expensive lifestyle that I had. lots of drinking, lots of partying. But very, very frankly, there came a certain point where I was actually working like 13, 14 hours a day. And it was a really long period of my life. And to the point where saying my partner, he was like, you know, when does this get unsafe? You know, this is very not okay. You're getting about 3 to 4 hours of sleep. You are not functioning. You're angry. You're hungry. You're hangry. you're really upset and emotional. And frankly, it was because of the amount of stress I had from work, from life, and just trying to balance everything. I would work late nights, early mornings, not get time to nap. I was trying to get to the gym, keep in shape, but that wasn't working out because I didn't have enough sleep. So it was just a downward spiral. And work itself was great. I was making tons of money. I was able to pay for my expensive lifestyle. But not-
By community standards, you were like, you made it.
I was. Oh, yeah. But by societal standards, I was bawling. Like, my parents were very happy with the jobs that I had. But then came a point where my dad actually was like, I didn't make all this money for you to suffer through this. And as privileged as that sounds, he didn't mean it in a like live off of me way, but more of a live happy. Don't live the way we lived. हामीले घोटेर काम गरेर आफ्नो बच्चा बच्चीसँग धेरै टाइम स्पेन्ड गर्न नपाएर तिमीहरूको लागि सबै गर्यौ. It's not for you to do the same. Like, I want, and that's what my dad said to me.
Don't keep on living the cycle. I know.
Yeah, don't keep on living the cycle. And when my parents said that and gave me that validation that it's okay to take time off of work, I was like, I don't have to please anyone else.
And that's also so rare.
Oh, it's so rare in our community. Oh, 100%. Like, nobody really thinks about how sometimes some breaks are just such a great refresher for the mind and the body. Mm. And I was unemployed. So I quit mid-March and I started working where I work early June, I want to say. So March, April, May. So it's sad, my neck. 3.5 to 4 months I was unemployed, and unemployment suits me. It's like, it really suits me. I am super recharged and super, I have enough sleep. I'm happy. I'm able to meet and catch up with all my friends. I have time for my family, time for my husband. I have time for people, and people are important to me. The people around me are very important to me. So it was really nice for me to take that break. But again, I was privileged enough to do so because Hussein's working and he covered me for a bit. Not everyone can do that. So yeah. Definitely, if you have the chance to take a small break, do it. Like, do it for yourself. Do it for your family. I definitely, like, the first 2 weeks of of unemployment was very hard to get through. I was very idle. I didn't know what to do. I was very shaky, anxious, quite untamed, because I was like, la, kam chaina, ke garera hola maile. I would think, la, you mistake to hoina maile, ke gareko, and all of that, living off of my savings, and really started to like hit me hard. And then I realized, you know what? Enjoy it. Ab tani kam chhodi sakhi chaina. Apply garera boss, interviews haru dirak. You don't even need to take the first job that you get. Just relax. And then I really talked myself into relaxing. And here I am with a job that I absolutely love, going into school next, like in the next 2 months, because I was trying to focus on school too. I wanted to go back to school anyways. But my plan wasn't to quit my job so soon. But I did. And I got that major break. And now I work at an old care home where I get to care for people. And I like it. It's part-time. It's flexible. It meets my financial requirements for the time being as a student that I'm going to be in the next 2 months. So definitely things started lining up very well for me after I quit that job. And frankly, I celebrated being unemployed quite well because my mental health that was deteriorating because of work stress just went away. I was no longer stressed that way. And now I know that in the future, when I get back into the corporate world, I need to know where to draw boundaries with work so that I don't let it affect my personal life and my mental health as much. And I say that I learned it sooner in my career than later, and I'm happy about that.
Yeah. Now, Asta, having had so many experiences over the last few years, how would you define success? What does success mean to you now?
I think 3-4 years ago, when I had just gotten out of college, I think success would have meant the best job, the best salary, the best life in terms of like your work and your academics and all of that. But now it's success is just being happy. Honestly, I didn't realize how sad I was until I became so, so happy with who I am and what I do. It's being happy with what you have. Obviously, aspirations, ambitions, shoot for the stars. Definitely, definitely. But at the same time, stay grounded and be happy with what you have, because not everything goes according to your plan or what you've envisioned for yourself. And yeah, just going with the flow of life. And mostly success is when you're able to be happy with your failures and your mistakes and just being like, you know, I'm only human. That's when I think one is very successful, because they really understand what truly being a human is. So I think success is being happy with your failures and mistakes and just being happy. Yeah.
I think it's part of accepting yourself, right?
I think it's a part of accepting yourself, but also realizing that you shouldn't be so overconfident about everything. That's a mistake I made for the longest time, where I was like, but truly, no. मान्छेले प्लेटमा जति खाना लिन्छ त्यो सबै सिद्धाउन सक्दैन कि त्यही भएर त्यो आफूले खाने जति मात्रै लिनु पर्छ भने जस्तै लाइक जस्ट टेक अन व्हाट यु क्यान एक्चुअली डु एन्ड आई फिल लाइक द्याट अल्सो मिनिमाइजेस द अमाउन्ट अफ फेलियर फर यु टु फिल लाइक अ फेलियर एन्ड माई ड्याड always enforced the idea of trying harder next time. Always. Okay. Although academics were so important for my parents, my mom was a little harder when it came to academics. Like, she wanted me to do well, especially on certain subjects like English, math, though, and science. You tinta subject mat chai ramro garnai parcha. And my dad was rather chill. He was like, "E la, aile, la, C I O, next time B I S, but no big deal." Like, his expectation was never an A, but my mom's expectation was A plus plus. So it was very nice that my dad always was like, "Ki bhota, alikat thora hai. Next time alikat body pad, ki thulo kura hota." So that really helped. And that really, when your parents reinforce you with positivity and your parents tell you that you can, even in the days where you feel like you can, I feel like that is a huge win. Not just your parents, but your bestest friends or your siblings or your partner. If they really support you in every step or every decision you make, even if it's a mistake, you will still be reassured of the fact that you're not letting anyone down. And for me, at least, whenever I failed, I felt like I was letting everyone down. But truly, I wasn't. They weren't expecting me to do all of this. I was putting all these pressures on myself. I was letting myself down at the end. So I realized, why don't I take my own advice that I give to so many other people about failure, about mistakes, about being human? I should start taking my advice because I am only human, you know. I don't have superpowers. I don't actually read people's minds.
As much as we want to.
Yeah, as much as I'd love superpowers, I don't actually have them. So I should cut myself a break.
Yeah. I feel like you've already answered the last question, Asta, but if there is any other advice that you'd want to give to our listeners, anything from self-love to representation to all these wonderful things we talked about today, anything we'd like to share?
I don't know if this is advice, but like, I just want to say to young girls, fuck society, like fuck them. You do you. You want to be you. You want to dye your hair pink, do it. You want to wear shorts, wear it. You want to cover yourself, cover it. You do you. Get a bunch of tattoos. Who cares what your parents think? At the end of the day, you're the one doing it on your body. You know, get a lip job if you want. Just make sure you're an adult to make that decision for yourself. Wear whatever, sneakers, heels, whatever you want. Just do you. And like one thing that Molly going to my life, my kusto ki khollo lagcho bhane haina hamro society eti tada aisakyo, you know, women have been empowered and I feel like there's a long way to go still, you know. But they don't know how to live with powerful women. Okay? So advice for my girls is keep being powerful. Fuck them if they don't accept you. You'll find people who will. You'll find the same types of people, like 100%.
And I think as long as you accept yourself, I know.
Yeah. I feel like for the longest time, I just wanted to fulfill what other men wanted me to be. Growing up. And then thankfully it clicked sooner than later in my head that I don't need to fulfill anyone else's desires. I need to fulfill my own desires. So fulfill your own desires and yeah, just be you. Just be you because you're beautiful. Just the way you are. I know, sexy. Like it's so cheesy. It's so cheesy. Like I feel like everyone wants to be the same. Everyone wants to fit in. And it's this, again, a lot of people have talked about this, but it's so important to just accept yourself and be happy with your uniqueness. You're so important. And another thing that my dad said to me was, sabai jana ko hami tyo like media ma sabai kati euta personalities ko hami successes haru dekhchau haina tara unharuko failures haru hamile dekhaudaina. So we always want that with greed and stuff. So afno kisimle, we don't live our lives. We live our lives based on what we think we should do for ourselves rather than what we truly want for ourselves. So yeah, you want to get that degree, get it. You don't want to, don't do it. You know, just do you.
I love that. I love that idea that, you know, it's all about accepting yourself and it's not something that you will be able to do it like, I'm going to sit down and learn how to accept myself. It's a long process.
Oh,
like maybe when you turn 40, you'll have an epiphany as well and be like, oh my God, this makes sense. Like people all around you have been talking about it, but it has to make sense for you. Yes, it has to come from within.
Yeah. Because if you start doing things for other people, you're fulfilling other people's desires, yes, and that might give you some solace, that might make you happy because other people are happy with you, but on your deathbed, do you really want to think about no, you don't, you genuinely don't. It's it would be very sad if I was dying one day and I thought to myself that I feel like you are the only person you have to please in this world. You and your parents and your family and the people who really matter to you. Obviously, their opinions matter, but don't let their opinions matter so much that you forget about yourself. Mm-hmm. Because you have to live with yourself.
Yep, good or bad.
Good or bad. Yeah.
I know, regrets, hopes, yeah. Like, it's the happiness. Like, you're the one living with it.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, Asta, thank you so much for your time and thank you for sharing your story with us. I'm so happy that we got to talk about your life, your experiences, and share it with everyone.
No, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on Hamroyata. This is fun. This is always fun. I love to chat, and you're so outgoing that I love to chat with you. And there's so many similarities in our experiences. So it's always really fun to chat with people who are like-minded.
Likewise.
Yeah, we do.
As always, if you enjoy these conversations as much as I do, please share with your friends and family. If you'd like to share your feedback, you can reach us on Instagram at hamro.yatra or email askhamroyatra@gmail.com. I love hearing from you, so keep them coming.